It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
And this is Tony, a.k.a. Mr. The Bozer from The Foundry and Scribes Enclave.
And you're listening to the 186th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the MMO Neverwinter from Cryptic. Tonight we are joined by a absolutely great Foundry author, Mr. The Bozer. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into Foundry development and all that good stuff?
Well, certainly. I first sort of got into tinkering with the Aurora and Electron tool set. I didn't publish much of anything, so I just kept running on to new ideas before I could see things through. It was kind of interesting because I found Neverwinter Nights at a game store with my then-girlfriend, now-wife, and we were just looking for a video game. We didn't know what we wanted, and this random stranger shows up, and he's just like, you need to get Neverwinter Nights. You absolutely need to try this game. This is probably back right before Shadows of Undertide came out, and I swear to God, after we left, the stranger and the store both disappeared.
It's like a mythical app.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've been following the Neverwinter franchise since then, and just absolutely love the games, absolutely love playing with the tool sets, even if I didn't actually publish anything. And eventually, I got news that Cryptic was working on the new Neverwinter, and I was sort of kind of interested because I played some Cryptic games before, and they said they were going to be including a tool set, and I was absolutely interested, which pretty much brings us to where we are. I didn't manage to get into any of the beta programs except for the one major open beta, so my first chance at building the tool set was back when the game really sort of went unofficially live.
Wow. What was your experiences in the beta working with that?
Mostly just playing other people's content to see what they could do in the Foundry, because I didn't really have access just yet. I was really on there just for their stress tests as far as Foundry I was on there for stress tests as far as the actual game performance goes. And it wasn't until after everything was really established and going on that I actually got to play with the toolset itself.
Oh, cool. So you actually got to play the game a bit before you actually start going into toolset development.
Yeah, which I think really helps. I hear some people say that they never play the game. They only play with the toolset and they only publish. And that's fine. But you should really know what you're making and how it's going to come out in the end, I think.
I agree with you. I mean, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, just before, our persistent world work, I mean, I was an avid Neverwinter Nights 1 player, and I played Neverwinter Nights 2 for, probably a good 8 months before I started developing it. So, I mean, it was a very good experience just to understand how the game worked itself to develop. So it's the same thing. Can you tell us a little bit about the quests that you developed and the names of them and, how people can find them?
Well, certainly. The first one I worked on is called Bonderleaf's Thero Aggregator. It's actually sitting on the featured and best tabs right now, which is awesome.
Oh, it is awesome.
So it shouldn't be too hard to find. And that was sort of my test quest for myself to sort of play with the Foundry and see what it was actually capable of and what I was capable of. And apparently I did good, but it's sort of a offbeat, humorous, but still sort of epic quest at the same time. Actually, the story takes a lot of lessons off of Gremlins 2, of all things.
That's a different twist.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
I didn't even know I was doing it at the time. I just sort of came back. I was like, you know what? The main plot line of this is directly lifted from Gremlins 2. I have to make it less like that movie now.
That is nice, though. I mean, it's funny how some things will influence you and you don't even realize it. You're doing something.
I insist that it was completely subconscious. But it was a lot of fun to build that one. It was actually just a completely random idea on a page of random ideas that I sort of wrote as a writing exercise to get the very sort of cliche and too generic ideas out of my system. So, like, the top of the list would be your son of a farmer and rats of the basement stories. And then when I got down to about the 20th line, it started to sound more like things like Trolls Rob a Wizard's Tower. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And from there, I sort of hopped on, and that's when sort of the preparation stopped and the tinkering began. And once I really got into messing with the tool set, more ideas popped up over time where I was like, oh, you know, one of these characters can be a cat. That's excellent. I can throw hidden objects everywhere, do a Sideshow Bob reference. I spent several months building that one out and published it. And I was very fortunate to get my first reviews from some extremely helpful people who told me which parts were absolutely terrible. Went in and fixed them, and after about 30 rounds of revisions, it was a good quest. The new one, Tomb, was sort of a different direction. This time around, that one's not on... Actually, it might be on the best list. Yeah, it looks like it's still on the best list. Without giving sort of too much away about the story, because there's a sort of major surprise waiting for you in that quest. When I started building it, I sort of put two placeables together, realized what they look like, and kind of built an entire quest and a story just around that one little object, which in turn sort of led to the more difficult creative challenges. The story that I wrapped around this was that you're playing a character who is chasing down the relics listed in an old poem, which is sort of like a Beowulf on steroids kind of story, at which point you meet some characters that hate your guts because you're a hero, and everything just sort of unfolds from there. You get traps and ambushes and surprises around every corner. What was sort of difficult around that is, since I had based it around a poem, I had decided to write the actual poem, which I didn't realize at the time, but writing poems is really hard.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It blew out of control. It ended up being something like 23 stanzas or something like that, to the point where when I built it in the game, I sort of felt bad for the players and just added this little button where it's like, you know, you can skip this. If you want to read it, it's a lot of fun, but I understand you want to kill things, so if it's here for you if you want it.
Oh yeah.
And so far that's all I've published at this time.
Well, that's a laundry list for sure, though. Yeah. You've gotten a lot of stuff done. I mean, I like your approach coming up with the subset of ideas that, you know, you're planning on doing something with, possibly, depending on, you know, what you end up using. But at least you have a brainstorm going where you have all these different ideas fleshed out, you know, not necessarily fleshed out, but, you know, at least available to you to help guide your quest development, what you're kind of looking to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a little bit even less so for the second one, because it was just everything was wrapped around an accident. I think in the future, I am going to do a whole lot more planning for quests. Sort of the play period with the Foundry is over. I know what it can do. I know what all the objects are that you can place and where to place them and how to place them. So at this point, I'm kind of slowing down, sitting back and going, all right, I have to really, the next one really has to be crazy because people have liked the first two. So I sort of have to keep that up now. I can't like just sort of fall back can't rest on my laurels, so to speak, with that. I really have to release something high quality and awesome next time.
Yeah, well, hey, well, that is part of the process where, you know, you're developing stuff to get your feet wet / to understand what's available to you. And like you said, what the Foundry's capable of and being able to kick out. Now you can start expanding out even further, you know, extrapolating ideas and, you know, putting different functions together that you never even thought that you'd be able to do before. That's exactly how it goes. That's great. But, you know, moving on, I mean, yes. You talk, 'cause something that's been interesting to me, you know, looking at a lot of the Neverwinter development and the Neverwinter Foundry community, you know, is the Scribes Enclave. So for people who don't know, you know, can you tell the audience about what the Scribes Enclave is and how it assists you as a Foundry author?
Absolutely. The Enclave is this really brilliant idea that I can't take credit for. There was conversation about developing a volunteer review program between players. I believe credit for the idea can go to player Redneck Ronin, but a different player, Zierlin, who's really taken the initiative and brought it to life. And they're both completely awesome for doing this. The birth of it really comes from the fact that, you know, when you're quest first comes out after you've clicked that publish button, no one can really see it unless they're deliberately looking for it. It's sort of hidden off down in the darker depths of the Foundry quest catalog because there's a ton of stuff out there.
Right.
And in order to really get visible, first you need, I think it's 5 reviews and 20 different, it's 5 reviews to get out of sort of that little hidden world and into the actual searchable database. And then it's, I think, 20 full plays to get yourself eligible for what they call a daily quest, which is sort of the sweet spot that every author wants to be on, because then there's at least some incentive for people beyond your story to go in and play the quest. They can get some in-game currency for that. Now, how people have traditionally handled that in the past is with review trades. They'd go on the Neverwinter forums and they'd say, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know, give me a nice, honest review, but just please play my quest and I'll play yours. And that's, you know, the community is amazing that they would come together and do that when it's so hard to get your quest seen. But at the same time, it's sort of really time consuming, not really reliable, because you're sort of going up there hoping that enough other people have published something recently at the same time that want their first reviews. So bringing it back to Scribes Enclave, this is sort of a group that's like, just come to us. We'll give you your first reviews. We'll give you your first 20 plays. There's no strings attached. Obviously, we have authors up here. You're welcome to come and enjoy their quests, but you don't have to review anything if you don't want to. If you're just looking for people to see your new work, if you're proud of your new work, we're excited to see it. And as for how that sort of helped me personally as an author, I came on as a reviewer first. I didn't come there really looking for reviews. But what it has helped me with is just there's an amazingly constructive and helpful community there, because you don't get these sort of like generic, you know, that's great or that's horrible two-word review. These are, you know, people that really sit down with a notepad and play through the quest beginning to end. They'll look for spelling errors. They'll see if something can break. They'll actually beta test quests whenever they have time.
That's pretty amazing, actually. That's an amazing amount of commitment by, you know, folks to do something like that. Because that takes a lot of time. And you have to have that detail-oriented mindset to do that, too.
And there's, you know, I do my best to sort of live up to that. There's people in there that are just so much better than I am at getting on top of it and getting the plays in. Hopefully I can catch up to them soon.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to availability. Obviously, some people have more time than others, and, you know, families and stuff. I mean, it's a little bit hard to do, but, you know, plus whatever else they got going on. If they're, you know, five developers yourselves, you got to look at the fact that there are people who really enjoy, and we've come across a lot of these individuals in our line of work, and where people they just really enjoy going through and kicking every rock over and turning the stones and kicking the tires of stuff. It's something that's great that the community is so large that you get a nice population of those folks that are involved, you know, want to be involved in a process like that.
Oh yeah, and you know what you see from it. These are people that really believe in the Foundry, that they really love this. They think it's the absolute best part of the game, and it is. I completely agree. And they're just dedicated to encouraging people to keep going and keep publishing things. And it's a wonderful place to come and visit. It's a wonderful place to, you know, I've met all of my Neverwinter friends through this so far that I talk to on a regular basis, which is another great benefit for me, because working in the Foundry as an author is such an isolated experience.
Correct.
You can only do it single player. You can't collaborate with anyone. So you're just sort of sitting in your cave, moving objects in place and typing dialogue and slowly sort of going crazy.
Yeah.
Unless you have this little circle of people that won't sort of roll your eyes when you're talking about what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's always anytime you're doing development. I mean, even if you are doing it in a group setting, because typically people that have been working on these types of projects, and I have, like I said, I have the experience with Neverwinter Nights 2 development. The fact that we have a team of developers, but the fact that we're still segregated by location, you know, none of us lived in the same region. That, you know, we're still spending a lot of time on Skype or, you know, stuff like that to try to coordinate efforts and, you know, those types of dialogues, but you're still, in a way, you're still working your own little cave. You do the exact same type of thing. So having that somebody listen to you and go over stuff with you about the stuff is still a very beneficial thing to have available to you.
Oh yeah, well, it's definitely what's kept me going in the Foundry. I probably would have dropped off the face of the earth with it by now.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine. You know, I was reading some of the forum posts where people were talking about, you know, a lot of Foundry authors moving on, doing different stuff, and worried about, you know, that being an issue. You know, that I think that, you know, with something like what you guys are doing with the Enclave, I think that it has a lot to do with retention and excitement to keep the development going. You know, that's one of the reasons why we're doing what we're doing, to try to help get people on to be able to hear what other developers are talking about, and maybe potentially even growing that interlinking between the two.
Oh, absolutely. And I think any opportunity someone has to encourage people to keep publishing, they should definitely go for it, because there's some incredible work out there. When I say the Foundry is the best part, I'm not necessarily talking about actually getting to play with the Foundry. The quests, no offense to Cryptic, the quests done by some of the Foundry authors just blow anything you see in an MMO away in terms of quality and writing.
Yeah, well, in a lot of times, because, I mean, you as a Foundry, I'm glad you brought that up, because I never really thought about it that way before, but if you look at the fact that when you're developing for a game company, regardless, you're under deadlines, you're under a lot of pressure, you're under a lot of stress, because that's your mainstay. That's why you're getting your food on a table. Mm-hmm. And I don't care how creative you are, Unless you have like a real professional author that you're adapting work from, or somebody who is a story writer or for a product, you're going to have that, you're going to have those problems, because you're under deadlines. I mean, it's like it's not like, hey, you're sitting down at the tool set and you're working out some stuff, and it might take you a couple extra weeks than it would take a Foundry author, but a Cryptic game producer to actually go through and develop something themselves from scratch, because that you got somebody banging in your ear all the time, hey, when's that going to be done,
Yeah, definitely.
And the fact, something else too, and I don't want to be a dead horse, but the fact of the matter is like, it's always harder to develop something that you may not have the vision for. Like, so say you're a Foundry author and I hand you some quests from our server, and I say, hey, can you adapt these and give you might be like, yeah, I technically can do it, but if you don't have the vision, you don't have that zeal to do it, then it's not going to be the same as somebody like yourself who has the vision and knows the story and knows what you're trying, the end game of what you're trying to do, and putting it all together.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's just, and even just in general, I've found that professionally or even academically, even if you love it, it can suck the fun out of it.
Absolutely. It just all depends. I mean, I've seen people, who've been able to do it as in a professional capacity where, their job is to do that. But I've also seen people that, may not have done as well, or been in an environment where it didn't, that was too much crap, too much stuff to deal with constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just all depends. It's one of those types of things. So,
what type of feedback do you normally get from your players? Is it what you expect, or is it something different? Is it good, bad, and different?
It's actually a lot better than I expected on a couple levels. First of all, in terms of the excitement over what I've published, I did not expect people to... I didn't really know what to expect in terms of that, because sort of wrote for myself, but in the back of my mind, I had this little like, everyone's going to love this. This is why you have to keep going. But I didn't really know that. And when my first work came out and there were people just kind of going crazy over enthusiasm, that was just an awesome feeling that I really did not expect. And then in terms of constructive criticism, see the last question about Scribe's Enclave, an immensely helpful place, especially my second quest came out. They picked through, they found every spelling error. They worked through it to break the game. Someone did what he calls a sidecar review, where he plays the game and I just sort of sit quietly along the side to see how he does.
So you can see where he struggles, what they like, what they don't like.
Exactly, which was cool. Just insanely helpful. That was so cool. And then I ended up breaking the quest during that run.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
There's a few spelling guys, and which is good, because I'm atrocious when it comes to proofreading.
Yeah, it's tough, because when you're focused on the experience as far as the gameplay is concerned, the setup, the mobs, the story, you're focused on the big, like the conduct.
Yeah.
And when you're starting to get into that level of, okay, you spent all that time to develop, but then all of a sudden, now I got to go back and proofread everything. And it's harsh after you're all said and done with everything else.
Are you here? You are. I defeat you, Shell. Talk like Yoda, do I?
Exactly.
Yep.
Or even just the little notable things where it's like, you called me he here. I'm a girl.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because you have to use gender-neutral language for everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, that, or if they have a way to insert, because I don't know, I haven't really got a chance to play with the Foundry a whole lot, but I don't know if there's a way to insert in like the generic placeholder, because I know in Neverwinter Nights 2, they have a you know, boy, girl, sir, madam, you know, this is the type of thing that will automatically, you know, switch depending on whatever the conversation trigger person is, you know, it'll actually detect that.
Yeah, I'm praying that Cryptic goes back and adds a lot of that in, because that's, with the exception of being able to say the player's name and sort of pseudo detect their class using skill sets, there's really not much you can do to personalize the story to an individual player character.
It doesn't
really assume much. Like, you really have to go as generic as possible in that regard, which I really hope changes in the future, because that would be an awesome power to have in this tool set, which is already so cool.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. That would be definitely exciting. But I do like the fact, too, to your point, that, you know, they're really being that level of supportive. I mean, we've heard about it on previous interviews. We've dabbled a bit in that area. But, you know, it's great to hear that, you know, there are people that are basically beta testing content for other people for the sake of beta testing content for other people.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's something that our community used to be very strong in, you know, for Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2. And I'm glad to hear that it's going into Neverwinter as well, that, you know, there's still that sense of community.
Oh, the sense of community is just amazing. It's enough to just completely obstruct and throw out of vision any comment that can be left by a troll, any sort of anger or drama that occurs. It's just, you know, you go to either Describes Enclave or you go to the Foundry forums in general, and it's just a paradise almost all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's big. I mean, we talked about that in the last episode. Every internet Neverwinter Foundry author we've had on so far, we talked about the troll factor. You know, and not having to deal with that, or, you know, knowing how to deal with that, especially if you're new to content development. You know, that's always the first hurdle, so to speak.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just, you know, the easiest solution is just remember that those guys were never your audience. Like, you're not building anything for them. Who cares?
You're absolutely.
You know, the people that leave you the 5-star reviews and say they love it, or the people that leave you the 3-star reviews and bother to tell you why, that's your audience.
Right. And I think that's a good point, too, for when anybody looks back at this sort of thing, is realistically, there's always going to be somebody that hates it for whatever reason, even if it's saying, well, I just played an awesome one and this isn't as awesome as that. And I agree with you, as you know, I think that's the mindset you got to keep, is it's the people who are being fair and the people who are saying you're doing awesome or it was good, but here's what to improve, that, to your point, those are the ones you worry about. So it sounds like that's one of your favorite features of being able to develop things. Is there something specifically of Foundry development that you like as well?
Oh, the map building, which is it's just playing. It really is. It's I've never been in the 3D editor and just felt like I had this to sort of soldier through something. I just have to see it through to the end. I'll get lost in it completely. It's just the sort of the coolest adult or young adult, not in my case, but it is the sort of coolest adult version of playing with blocks.
Right.
But you get just loaded down with those sort of Bob Ross style happy accidents that can completely change your quest.
Oh my god, okay. The Bob Ross reference, oh my god.
I do think we now need you to explain, you know, the working and using the phrase happy accident. Now we have a happy little tree. We have a happy little NPC.
in my particular case, I was building my new room. I had put together this island, and one of the things to know about the tool set is when you're interacting with it, and this was before they had the free camera mode they just introduced, but when you're interacting with it in 3D mode, if you sort of highlight an item, it then loses all of its collision, and if you are standing there, you'll just fall right through.
Right.
So I'm building this island, and I make the mistake of looking down, and I highlight the item that I'm standing on, and I fall through, and I look around, and I go, I've accidentally made this incredible underwater cave, like, under this island, which then became an extra 10 minutes of content for the quest.
Cool.
Yeah, that's smooth.
That's the sort of the thing that you love to find in it. When you start to realize that something is working but way better than you thought it would work, that's just a good tool set to have that can give you that moment.
Right. And the other thing, too, I think, to your point, that's where there's an advantage because I know for a fact I can get Brian's face to twitch by saying phrases like walk meshing. So, you know, yeah. To your point, it's kind of nice to be able to go, oh crap, I just deleted that, but oh crap, now I can turn this into something really cool and really unique. And I agree with you. I think that's a big strength of the system.
Yeah. And also as far as the, in terms of strength of the system, I just sort of really enjoy, and this is reflected on the gameplay as much as the Foundry, but sort of how visceral the experience is in the world itself.
Right.
You know, I loved playing Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2, but it always sort of felt to me like you were just sort of walking over the world and interacting with other characters or the occasional item, and things might animate and move, but it just sort of felt like you were sort of, your character sat on top of it.
Right.
In this version, you can really get in there, and you know, in the main game to some degree, but a lot of the best examples of this I've seen in Foundry quests is that you can set it up so that you can change the world and interact with it very directly and find things. It's like, you know, you get close enough and you notice that part of that rock is an illusion that vanishes when you get close, and you've just discovered a whole cave system that goes under what you just walked on.
Right.
Which makes for fantastic storytelling moments.
Yeah, definitely. Especially to your point, if you do that in a way that they have no reason to go near that rock until an individual mentions like, gee, I'm looking for the cave of the rock or something like that. And then the guy starts going, well, gee, let me wander around. And then to your point, I mean, just like true magic, that thing that you've been ignoring all the time you've been on that map suddenly makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And you actually get to just find it, which gets taken away a little bit because they added this sparkle trail into the game. But fortunately, as a Foundry author, it's really easy to break that.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't you get to draw the sparkle trail to a degree?
No, and I've gotten a lot of criticism in my quests. Fortunately, people haven't dropped too many stars off it for this. Neither one of my quests have the sparkle trail in it, and you don't really have control over it. The engine renders that by itself. And if you're building a custom map, it still renders it sort of along the default floor plane. So if you do some crazy island or something, it's just going to vanish into the ground 2 feet ahead of the character and you never see it again.
Nice.
Even if it's supposed to direct you. And I love that. In my last quest, I actually noted that they upset whatever god creates that sparkle trail and it's not helping you anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's the type of thing, though, is I know people like it there if you get confused or what have you. But with that, the first time I saw that, you know, and I'm not critiquing here because God knows I couldn't make the things half as fancy as they did. But for me, my big thing is I remember Half-Life 1.
Yeah.
And I remember that first big creature you get to, the hunts by sound, all that good stuff. I must have spent days trying to figure out the fact that I missed one switch in one room.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. That exact thing happened to me in a Foundry quest. Author Escarine published, I think it's called, it was The Absence of Light. It was a sort of shout out to Myst. And it's filled with puzzles that you have to sort of solve over. And I must have added an hour and a half to her average playtime because I didn't talk to one character. And I just roamed the map, and it was a nice map, so I didn't really mind roaming around it, but just completely at a loss for what to do, which was great. You know, I messaged her after. I'm like, you very effectively made a puzzle that I couldn't solve.
And I think that's something that I like the Foundry's capability to allow players to create, is sort of back to the old days of Nintendo, and where people are scribing down answers, writing down codes to get to the next level, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, Super Mario Brothers, any of those sort of level games, if you couldn't beat the game, that was it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's a good tool to add, is if you want to make it and you want to make it so people have the trail, you know, as I said, not critiquing in any way, shape or form. But if you say, I want people to have that ability, that's a good thing. Yeah. If you say, to your point, I want to break the hell out of that because I don't necessarily want people to have the capability to go, well, this puzzle makes me think for 5 minutes, hit the easy button and poof, there's my trail. You can do that too. And I think that really makes for a good content developer side capability.
Yeah, and it opens sort of some fun visual challenges in the quest as well. You know, as a developer, if you get rid of that sparkle trail, it sort of now falls onto you to design the world in such a way that people will know what direction to head to next, or at least have a good idea that it looks like someplace where you're supposed to go.
Right. Because to your point, okay, I'm in a ravine. I have two options. Go back the way I came or go forward.
Yeah.
Or, gee, I'm looking for a town and there's a town ahead.
Yeah.
No, I really like that. So we've talked about some of the good things that are fun in the Foundry. Are there any challenges you faced?
The biggest challenge that I've had so far, and I don't really think it's going to improve much just because of it's sort of a necessity to the way the game design is sort of wrapping my head around combat balance. Part of it's pretty unsolvable because, you know, this is, you don't really get to control the level range that people play this. You don't control what class they are. A rogue is going to do much better than a cleric. And actually, like, a level 10 wizard is going to do a lot better than a level 60 wizard because the enemies sort of spike in difficulty around level 50, and a lot of them might be completely immune to your powers, at least to slow them down. Now, I don't think they should restrict Foundry content to a certain class or a certain level range or a certain size of team, because you want as many people as possible to see your quest. So it's obviously the best answer right now. But the flip side of that coin is you'll get back-to-back reviews that go like, this was way too easy, this was way too hard.
Right.
And it might even be from the same person, for all I know. Now, some authors have come up with a solution to this. Some of the complete geniuses that work on this, and that's not sarcastic, they are, I would never think to do what these people think to do, but one of the many things they've come up with as a workaround limitation is that they will create difficulty sliders in the beginning of their quest, and right, you know, it could be like, you know, are you with a team? And they'll say, yes, I'm with a team, and suddenly the whole quest will spawn extra monsters. Or, you know, I'm just a cleric, and then it'll take most of the monsters away,
right,
so that you can heal them to death.
No, that's pretty neat, though.
That is really neat. I still don't know that I trust myself with it, because I really haven't been, like I said, I would never think to come up with that. And seeing it implemented, I still don't think I'm sort of proficient enough in knowing where the happy balance between easy and hard is to say, like, you know, oh, you wanted it in hard mode. Okay, here's 15 pit fiends.
Yeah.
That's your hard mode.
Yeah, and I mean, oops, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know that sign, you know, Grand, we're still Neverwinter 2 primarily working on getting into Neverwinter. But I know Brian's made sliders and various experience modes and everything else. But I know what we've had to do at times is at the end of the day, this monster gets like a plus 50 against this class or against this race, because we had at one point in time with all the min-maxing, you know, you had level 80 gnomes everywhere.
Yeah.
So we made a creature that selectively hunts gnomes and beats the snot out of them. So to your point, it was, okay, it's easy for gnomes until you get to the point where those things are. And then if you're in a party of all gnomes, you guys are not walking out of there.
Yeah. And what's baffling is that, you know, some of these authors will pull that same effect off more or less. They can't specifically target things without any access at all to any of the scripting or really encounter customization that much.
Right.
You know, when you drop a null in the Foundry, it's going to be the same null with the same attacks no matter what. And you can make it look different, but it's going to function the same way.
Right.
And it'll be just as difficult with just as many hit points every time. But even with that, people have managed to do really good jobs of scaling things up or down as necessary.
Right.
And as for myself, I will put in encounters that make sense thematically. I'll throw in a couple of you know, extra trolls if I think there's going to be a whole lot of trolls in one corner of the room. I'm only going to change it if I get sort of an overwhelming response that this was horrible in one way or the other.
Right. Which, I mean, to your point, it's a very delicate balance for that, because there's some things that you can go, hey, I can make it so, you know, at the end of this, the guy's going to feel awesome. There's a pile of dead, you know, whatever's piled all around him. But then to your point, okay, guys, a wizard walks in there and goody, I get three spells and then these guys are all over me.
Yeah. And yeah, it's funny too, because, you know, you can also set up some moments to a degree where strategy is involved. In my first quest, I early on got a lot of complaints that once you get into the library, everything sort of attacks you and piles up and just will slaughter you unless you're a totally geared up great weapon fighter or something. And my response to that was to sort of quietly go, you can sneak around that whole thing. But that was sort of set up to be kind of a dangerous encounter that you can totally avoid.
Right. And I think that's the other thing, too, that, you know, to your point, it's where it's both good and bad is, in some ways, okay, we can make it so you can fight or run away, which is good, but the bad thing is, okay, but now we have to figure out if you run away and those guys were supposed to give you some sort of insight.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I mean, all in all, you know, what's great to hear is the fact that the more people we interview, the more they like the Foundry, the more they like the way that the community is responding to each other. As I said, I do think that that's a really good thing to see.
Yeah, and in terms of quality, too, things have just been getting better and better since the start of the game. Like, every right. week, a quest comes out that you play, and you just sort of sit down and go, how did they do this? Like, not even in terms of free time or talent. It's just you have no idea that this one person can do something that is really the quality of a whole professional team.
Right.
Which is just awesome. And it just seems to keep going in that direction. And I'm really interested to see how far it can go.
Right.
And try to keep up with it, of course.
Of course.
Well, you know, talking about all that, I mean, you know, especially about how much Foundry stuff is, you know, has been going on. What kind of features would you like to see added to the Foundry moving forward?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, I'd like to be able to see incorporating more of the character traits in the storytelling. They set you up during character creation. You know, you select race, your gender, your deity, your hometown, what your backstory was in your hometown, and all of that stuff can really be called on for a ton of great storytelling moments and just really making your quest personal to the player, which, as you said, it is something that's ever present in both of the Neverwinter Nights tool sets. I just really love to see it here. Something else I'd like to see, which is they seem to be going in this direction, is more animated interactive objects. Since launch, they've added illusion objects that vanish when you get close enough. They just added these volume gates, a variety of objects that will raise or lower, like drawbridges, depending on how close your character is. Or I discovered today, which is awesome, how close a non-player character is. So you can then go in and use that to sort of animate something that the players might not have control over and sort of change the world around them in fun ways. And I've already seen that used to make a pretty awesome platformer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The last couple authors we talked to were talking about the automatic drawbridge stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, those things are really cool. One of the things I'd really like to see is I would like to see them revamp the player incentives for going into the Foundry content. You know, right now the obvious player incentive is you get the best content in the game. Understandably, people want a little more. You know, they want to gear up their characters. They want to, you know, get the awesome loot and everything. And I understand that for balance reasons, there's some things they can't do because people will, you know, sections of the community will absolutely hop in and make farm quests to get things as fast as possible. But I still think they sort of need to improve on what it is right now. Because, for example, Cryptic has a clock in the game, and every hour it changes as to what you can get as an extra perk for doing something. So at 5 o'clock, it'll be the dungeon, and you can get special items for running that dungeon at 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock will be Foundry, and you get an XP bonus for completing the quest, which is awesome, but if you're already max level, it really means very little for you personally. Now, one of the ideas that's sort of been thrown around on the forums a lot that I'm really behind and I really hope they do implement is to have sort of Foundry tokens that have a chance of dropping at a quest completion or maybe completion of the daily, that would function a lot like the tokens they have for almost every other gameplay element in Neverwinter, where you save them up and then you buy special gear that you can't get anywhere else in the game. I think if they implement something like that, you'll see people running to the Foundry a whole lot more than they currently do.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. That's an interesting concept as well. I mean, a lot of these concepts are very interesting, what they've introduced to the, you know, gameplay. I mean, they're definitely new, definitely innovative and everything.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I'm pretty confident that if something that comes up in the forums does fit their vision or they can make it fit their vision, these really are guys that will throw it in there for you. They have obviously paid a lot of attention since launch. You know, some people might feel the contrary regarding a personal subject or something they want to see that didn't happen. But just from playing other games, you know, these guys come right out there and will contact individuals about certain things that they might want more information on so that they can better help, which is very cool.
Right. And I do think that's a big thing, too, because there's some other groups that do that to varying degrees, but the fact that if the forum community all starts talking about, oh, these guild, you know, we want guild tokens, or we want quest tokens, or we want foundry tokens, the fact that they'll actually look at that and go, okay, is there a way to do that in a way that's still fair? So you don't have a 10,000 man guild that gets, you know, all these tokens and they don't mean anything in that guild because they have so many of them. But if you're, you know, five friends, you're SOL. And to your point, it is something neat that they will actually go and either talk to the individual or talk to the group and say, look, we want more on what you're thinking, or here's what we're thinking. And, you know, it gets kicked around a bit. So, you know, the players do truly have more of a voice than they do in most games.
Yeah, that is really, I have heard firsthand from one or two folks that that's sort of the reason they came back, or the reason they stuck around, or the reason they sort of saw something through. You know, we recently overwent, you know, as you said before, there was talk about some people who quit the Foundry altogether and moved on to something else. A lot of that happened around the time that they updated with the first module of the game, and it kind of did a lot of things to Foundry content that took a while to fix. A lot of people's work just stopped working.
Oof. Yeah.
And it was pretty rough because a lot of these folks, you can feature, you get your quest featured by Cryptic, which is sort of their stamp of approval on something.
Uh-huh.
That they'll see your quest and say, you know, yes, this is a high quality quest, we like it, you should play it. Now the downside to that is it's then out of your hands. You can't edit it once it's featured. It's also sort of your stamp on it saying, I'm done, this is the finished product. I won't really be coming back to this. Now the problem with that is a lot of quests broke for various reasons that then players could not go back in and edit. And on the one hand, it was really awful that that happened, but I know one or two folks who only stayed around because of how that was handled once it did happen. That, you know, people would get PMs like, where did you see this? What quest did it happen in? You know, we'll unfeature your quest so you can edit it, and then we'll feature it again as soon as you publish. And that sort of dedication to very specific individual issues.
Right.
One more of those things that, you know, you don't get unless you talk to authors like yourself to get some of the background for these things. I mean, you know, just reading on forums or just, you know, ancillarily getting into the game and, you know, playing around, you don't really see this type of stuff. It's all good topics. It's all good info.
And they were even kind enough to do a wipe on the reviews and comments requests that were broken like that. Because you would get, like, as you know, you reminded me, you just said if you just log in the game, you don't necessarily know what's going on. And there were a ton of players that have never touched the Foundry and never gone to the forums, that they would just go into a quest and say, like, you know, this is broken. This is a terrible quest. Why is it featured? 1 star.
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, Cryptic went in and was like, no, we understand that that was an unfair assessment of your quest, so we'll just take that away.
Yeah. Well, that's good. They handled it right. I mean,
they handled it wonderfully, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What are some of your future plans and projects that you got going on? I know we talked about what you've done already, but, you know, from your laundry list you talked about earlier of ideas, what are you kind of leaning towards for your next entendre?
Well, right now, I just put the finishing touches on an extended edition of my second quest that was partly inspired that people were finishing it too fast. It dropped below the 15-minute mark, which in Foundry means you no longer get special rewards for finishing it, which was a good method to avoid people from farming 2-minute quests. But if you only wrote about 20 minutes worth of story and people power through and just click on the dialogue, they'll drop you down to 14, and a lot of people won't play because they won't get rewards. So my solution to that was to run in and add a whole second map that I built from the ground up to sort of lead into the main part of the quest. And it amounts to about 5 or 10 minutes worth of just raw running around and killing things gameplay with a ton of more content. That'll probably be released and live by the time this recording goes live. As for moving on to the future, I do have the seeds of ideas for a campaign that I would like to work on. I'm kind of holding out to see what else the Foundry developers will introduce in terms of helping tell that larger style of story that spans quests. Because right now, it's a very, very good tool set for doing individual quests, and it's pretty okay for doing campaigns, and a lot of people have done some really wonderful stuff with it, but there isn't too much you can do without clever workarounds to sort of carry on choices from one quest to the next, or to tell sort of that larger story. So in the meantime, I'm kind of sticking to single shot campaigns, but sort of from the beginning, introducing these little characters that you're definitely going to see again, and then sort of pop up in other quests and sort of create a continuity between my quests, even if they're not directly related. Now, as far as specifics goes, right now I'm trying to tell a story without any words, without any sort of dialogue options, where you run through about a half hour dungeon and a very specific and detailed story unfolds, but entirely through context clues.
Cool.
Where you sort of piece together what's going on by yourself, and maybe you even interpret it a little differently, which would be really cool if I can pull that off.
Yeah. So yeah,
definitely.
Out of curiosity, because that one I got to ask a few questions.
Sure.
So are you thinking of having like, you know, and very basic example, like the scrap of paper type thing where there's things you can read as you move throughout?
No.
Is it going to be entirely by what happens to you around you and as you move through the world?
In my first room, you walk in just as some obviously ominous looking person drops a Neverwinter guard into a lava pit while a bunch of goblins are sitting around the lava pit cheering for him. And you don't actually fight any of that. By the time you get there, it's dispersed.
Right, right.
But it's very much the second option where you see what's going on. You don't read it at all. And maybe the most reading you're going to get is the lead into the quest where I have to write something and the names of various characters, because you can't leave them blank. Ideally, I'd love to do it without any words at all.
Right.
But I'd kind of like to, I'll do as few words as possible and absolutely no talking or reading.
No, I mean, I really like that idea. I think that's a really cool thing to do because it's not something you see people typically do. Typically, it's going to be, well, look, I don't feel like writing dialogue, so I'm going around it. This is actually, I'm creating a world where it's up to you to observe what's going on. And I think that's a very neat idea.
That's exactly what I'm going for. And yeah, I always actually, when I'm writing down my ideas, I won't avoid one that people are doing, but I do try to look for those moments of you know, what haven't we really seen yet?
Right.
And how well can I do it?
And I think that's good. I mean, you have to push the envelope.
Yeah. Another thing I would like to do is the exact opposite direction. I would like to do something that is much more along the lines of maybe Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter 1 in terms of storytelling and in terms of scope of story. The only problem with that is I'm friends with a couple of people who have already done a perfect job of it, so I'm not really sure how I would improve or build on that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that comes down more to the fact that, once again, like we were talking about earlier, about you have an idea for something, but you can't really hand that off to somebody else, and just like somebody else can't really hand it off to you. You might actually have a way of doing it that they didn't think about, and you're actually going to be adding overall tool chest of things that people can do to accomplish a campaign style story like that.
Yeah, which is sort of happened to me in a specific element. I got messaged a while back by someone who played my first quest and was just like, look, I want to get your permission first, but I am totally going to lift this puzzle you did, change it a little to make it my own. I'm going to incorporate it into the quest. They were very nice to give me credit for it. I don't even think they needed to go that far. I think it was just, I was incredibly flattered that they would consider something well done enough that they were like, I need this when I do my own work. That was really cool. And I've done that with some other people's work as well. You know, that's played through a campaign where I've seen the way something was referenced, or I've seen how they introduced the bad guy or how the encounter appears, and just gone like, all right, I'm doing that next.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Absolutely. You know, talking about all the stuff that we did, is there anything in closing that you'd like to, you know, tell the audience about, you know, just about anything that we haven't covered so far?
Well, to close up, I would encourage absolutely anyone who even thinks about creating something in the Foundry to just go in and play for a while. It's a really fun experience. You get to know really quickly if something you're doing works or not. You're not going to spend 4 days building something only to find out that, this isn't going to work out. You sort of get the idea very quick. It's not a very imposing tool set to use, and it is, again, the best part of the game, and we want as many authors as possible. So, you know, definitely run in and give it a try, and it's free, and you can't beat that part.
I was going to say, you can't argue free.
No.
Nope, not at all.
Free and well-maintained, yeah. Kind of hard to,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, really it is. For another thing, in closing, you know, I want to say thanks for coming on and, you know, continuing the author series. You know, it was yet another great interview and, you know, gave us and the audience a lot more to think about when it comes to Neverwinter development, playing, all the above. And, you know, it's really been a pleasure to have you on.
Definitely.
It's been a real pleasure to be here, and it was very nice to meet you both.
Yep, definitely. And likewise, you know, and anytime you have any updates, you know, feel free to shoot me a PM on the forums or whatever, you know, to let me know so we can get back on for a follow-up. And, you know, stay tuned, too. We're going to be organizing a roundtable Foundry author discussion coming up here in the probably by next month sometime. So stay tuned for that. I'll make sure that you're included on that as well.
Oh, awesome. I already know some of the people that you've already interviewed, so that'd be great.
Get
a chance to talk with them over voiceover instead of just in forums.
Yep. that's the purpose why we're going to this level, is to really open these discussions up to a more personal level and to get people to think a little bit outside the box what they're used to thinking about when it comes to development or whatever else. I think it really has been helping, and I think that we're going to see a lot more coming up in the future where, you know, people are going to really look to, you know, the discussions that we're having to help focus their attention on their development at some point.
That's fantastic. And I thank you for doing that, by the way, because I love anything that is done to help foster this community and strengthen it.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, so far, this is our fourth episode. I mean, I still haven't seen too much of a response on the forums or anything, so I don't know how many people are actually listening to these podcasts. I mean, I know our Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 listeners do, but I don't know how many Neverwinter people. So anything you can do to continue getting the word out there would be very favorable, considering that, you know, we haven't heard much of. Actually, we haven't had one response on our forums yet. So,
I write a reference into a Foundry quest, that would help.
The answer you seek is at 2 hours and 15 minutes of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, number 267.
Yeah, that'd be one way to work it in.
Drink more Ovaltine.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, you know, just how large the community is and the fact that we haven't gotten any responses. That's pretty – either we suck really bad or people aren't seeing our stuff, so I don't know. It's kind
of
hard.
I think a lot of people are kind of shy about it too, that they'll listen. They'll be like, I could say something here. But...
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and I think that's the other thing too is, you know, you got to kind of take it off the people who do comment, because realistically there's some people that are – you know, you don't want somebody thinking, you know, God, this kid makes content, he's on the forums, and he listens to the podcast. Does he do anything that's not?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, again, it's the problem and the blessing of the internet. The blessing is we can talk to each other in all these ways, shapes, and forms. The problem is people can take what you say any way they want to.
Yep. Well, after all that, I'm going to give you the closing line of the show.
Until next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.